Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Vegan Proteins, Muscles by Brussels Radio. My name is Giacomo.
And I'm Danny.
And this is our 57th episode. Just wanted to start off by thanking everybody for tuning in and listening to our last couple episodes and for all the feedback that you've given us. It's really encouraging to know that the episodes that we're putting out are resonating with you and that you're finding the information helpful. And the feedback helps because, you know, and I've said this before, but I'll say it again. We love to geek out about nutrition and fitness for vegan athletes constantly on the DL by ourselves. But because we are constantly talking about it or researching, we really don't know what you have or have not heard yet and what you want us to actually talk about. So when we get that kind of feedback, it is invaluable to us.
If you are enjoying these episodes and you are able to leave a review on whatever podcast app you're listening to, that would be super helpful for us because it does help us show up in other people's recommendations and it just gets the word out to more people. And that's really why we started this in the first place, was to help get good, solid, evidence-based information out to vegans or people who want to go vegan. If you guys feel so inclined, we would greatly appreciate it. So what have you been up to, Giacomo?
Welp, I have been enjoying my time with my quarantine buddy.
Yeah, what's the
super
awesome productive project that you've taken on recently?
I thought that you'd never ask because even if you told me not to talk about it, I'd probably say it at least three times. I have been finishing up a project that I started about 5 years ago and I wasn't happy with it back then, and I'm probably still not going to be happy with it right now because I am a perfectionist. But anyway, long story short, I'm making a complete replica, two spec, of Super Mario Brothers World 1-1, the very first side-scrolling world and design, and I am actually spending an exorbitant amount of time on this project.
Yeah, you are. Nice work. It does look really good, though, guys. When it's done, we'll post pictures of it online.
What have you been up to?
Same old, same old. Just working and training and gardening. I did finish my first batch of kombucha since the last time we recorded, and it came out so good and so much more carbonated than I expected. Every single bottle needs to be opened over the sink because it, like, opens like champagne and foams everywhere. But it's so good.
Yeah, the first time I popped one of those bottles, I think we lost like 40% of it to the carbonation because it wasn't refrigerated.
Listen, right? Giacomo literally watched me open the first one and freak out and be like, oh my god, that's so much foamier than I thought, and put it over the sink. I happened to be recording it live on Instagram when it happened. And then he opens one at the dinner table and I was like, what are you doing? He looks at me, listens, and opens it anyway. And it's just foam everywhere. So what we're going to be talking about today is we are going to be talking about something that one of my clients kind of inspired about whether macronutrients are the only thing that matter. Now, you guys know that we are big proponents of flexible dieting, which at its very core is making sure that you're eating the right amount of carbohydrates, fats, proteins, in order to reach your physique or strength goals. That's the core of it. So flexible dieting, sometimes called if it fits your macros, which I've talked about why I don't like the name of that. But I think a lot really, 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 really gets lost in this idea of you can eat anything if it fits your macros. So it begs the question, well, does anything else matter then? And I think it's a good question. And I think it's something that we need to talk about.
For sure. And it's one of those subjects where it's just not cut and dry. You know, every individual is different. Every person's journey and progression is different once they understand macronutrients on a basic level. You know, meaning like get in a balanced amount of carbs, fats, and protein and focus on protein. right? But, you know, I don't know if any of you are familiar with the story, but, like, for example, there was that teacher or that person who was talking about, like, the Twinkie diet. Basically, they ate nothing but Twinkies all day long and lost weight.
Yes.
So, yeah, so they controlled the caloric intake, basically, by eating nothing but Twinkies. So the thing was, and not to simplify, but the thing here is, like, well, just like calories, if you control your carbohydrates, proteins, and fat, you can get in the right amount of protein, you can get a balanced amount of macronutrients, and you could, I guess, theoretically eat what you want and reach your goals. But where do you draw the line? Like, do you just have protein shakes and nothing but, I don't know, Doritos all day long? Or do you find a little more of a balance and try to get in more whole foods?
So I think with us, a lot of it has always come down to who we assume our audience is, right? When we started doing this podcast, and I've been vegan for this is my 18th year being vegan. This is Giacomo's like 16th or 17th year being vegan. We assume our audience was already vegan. Those are the athletes we work with. They're all vegan. So we've taken this into consideration, and you know, the route most people have taken in the past, although I feel this is rapidly changing, is when they go vegan, they begin to eat a predominantly whole food, plant-based diet, right? You did it. I did it. So many people we know have done it. And we, you know, made this podcast initially, and I wrote my book initially thinking like those are the people we're talking to. The people who are strict, clean eaters, whole food, plant-based, can't eat anything that didn't grow out of the ground at like high noon on a tropical island or something. Those are the people that we have often found. One, they're the people who stop being vegan. More than anybody else, those are the folks who give up being vegan, the people that have cut out so many foods that there's not much left, and they eventually develop nutrient deficiencies, right? This sounds so backwards. Oh, you just started eating whole food, plant-based. How could you possibly have developed a nutrient deficiency? But a lot of the research shows that clean eaters or, quote, strict dieters are more micronutrient deficient than people who are not, right? So we wanted to teach those folks predominantly that you can include, you know, what a lot of people would consider to be fun foods, you know, having the occasional cookie, being able to go out with your family for pizza and still be really healthy and still reach your goals. But, you know, like anything, just like being vegan and being so whole food, plant-based, unprocessed, pure as the driven snow extreme, there is the opposite extreme. And now with the growth of the vegan, like anything you can eat, I can eat vegan movement, where you can literally find any animal-based food in a vegan version, we are seeing more and more people come to veganism, which is fantastic, but we're seeing them sort of bypass that whole food plant-based route entirely and just go straight to like processed vegan food, which is still a huge step in the right direction, but is also equally as problematic in its own way.
Right, and I think that's why we, as we saw it coming, we all just accepted it in advance. You know, the community said to ourselves, well, their lifestyle is changing, it's more compassionate, it's more environmentally friendly, animals are not being harmed. So yeah, of course, like whatever it takes to get you to live a vegan lifestyle makes sense, you know, but at what cost? You know, I mean, let's not forget, we're vegans, but we're also promoting a healthy lifestyle, you know, and we want to be around for the long run to hopefully leave this earth less worse than when we found it. And when we...
Less worse could also be said as better.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah, right? But basically, I guess we didn't realize just how bad it was going to get. And not to say that things are bad per se, but...
No, things are great. They're not bad. Things are great. I mean, more and more people feel like transitioning to a vegan diet is easy. And that's awesome. And actually, at this retreat of some very well-known vegan health professionals that we went to last year, There were, I don't know, 40 of us in a conference room, and it was actually very divided between people who said they would just be better off eating animal products than eating this new processed vegan crap, and the other half of the room, of which Giacomo and myself and Jeff Palmer, holla Jeff Palmer, were very passionately like, are you kidding me? How on earth could eating animal foods be better than eating a Beyond Burger? Like, are you vegan? I don't know. It was heated. Trust me, you wanted to be a fly on the wall in that room if you enjoy these types of podcasts. But, you know, there are issues that we see new vegans coming across now that, you know, somebody who went vegan back in the early 2000s like we did not have these problems. I mean, I think the most, like, processed food we could find back then would be, like, tofu pups and Boca burgers.
Yeah.
You know? Now you can literally find 47 different kinds of ice cream and like over a dozen vegan cheeses in any store you go to. You can literally eat a sad diet, a standard American diet, as a vegan now. And one hand, that's cool. On the other hand, you could see how that could lead even vegans to have a lot of the same health issues that standard American dieters have eventually. We just don't have the research on it yet because it's still pretty new. But there's like a level of common sense, I feel like, that is being missed right now.
On both ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
And I think it's worth talking more about the new era of vegans who are erring on the side of consuming too many of these, you know, standard American diet kinds of products. Because ultimately, it's not exactly optimal for one's health on a physical level. Like, you might be enjoying the comfort foods, but even on that, in that respect, in regards to your mental health, like, do you really want to eat nothing but comfort foods and get that kind of soothing effect from just eating the food you love, but they're not necessarily serving you because they're not nutrient dense?
So, are Giacomo and I about to make an argument for whole foods? Have we come full circle? No, we haven't come full circle because we were never against Whole Foods in the first place. We're just against zealotry in the Whole Foods movement. Are macronutrients all that matter for weight loss and physique change? Go.
Yeah, because that is how you're going to be making sure that you get enough protein to support your muscle repair and performance. That's how you're going to make sure that you get enough fat in to support hormonal health. That's going to be the way that you can make sure that your food is serving you, so you're getting the right kind of fuel in that's readily usable for your workouts and after your workouts to recover, like carbohydrates.
So yeah, the short answer to the question, are macronutrients all that matter? If the goal is weight loss, if the goal is physique change, like losing body fat or building muscle, I would say 99% yes. You know, it doesn't matter how many vitamins and minerals you get or phytonutrients you get, you're not going to lose weight if the macros aren't there. It's not going to happen. You're not going to build muscle if the macros aren't correct. It's not going to happen. So for weight loss, for physique change, are macros all that matter? Mostly, yes. But the real question is weight loss and physique change all that matters? No. Of course your health matters. Like, of course your health matters. You could look totally shredded with a six-pack on the beach this summer eating nothing but protein powder and vegan Pop-Tarts. Yes, you can do it. But eventually, you do that for long enough, it's going to catch up with you health-wise. You will eventually develop some kind of nutrient deficiency. You could develop some sort of heart disease or high blood pressure. Now, would it be to the same degree as somebody who is eating whey protein powder and regular Pop-Tarts? We don't know. There's no research on that yet, but you could assume that it would head in that same direction, even if maybe it's a little bit slower. That's still not a direction you want to be going in.
And then, you know, if your goal is to be the best athlete that you can be, regardless of whether it's for your physique or for endurance or what have you, just remember, you know, the body sees stress as stress. It doesn't matter if it's, you know, psychological stress. It doesn't matter if it's physical stress from training. It's all the same. And if you want to adapt to being able to perform and recover better over time, Well, you know, it also, your health matters, essentially. So the healthier that you're eating, the better the foods are for your body, the better your health is, the more of an anti-inflammatory effect you'll have on your system. And so it's not just about getting to your goal. You know, yeah, you get beach ready for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, but where are you going to be in the next 15 years? You know, is your body going to be able to handle the workload that you continue to throw at it in the gym or wherever you do your training?
Yeah. Could you eventually become so unhealthy that for whatever reason you couldn't train at all? And then even the little glimmer of like your awesome physique you were holding on to will slip away very quickly, you know? So I think that this idea gets lost in certain flexible dieting circles, in certain, if it fits your macro circles for sure, because a lot of people take that very, very literally. If it fits your macros, you can eat anything. And you know, to a degree, it's true. But these times where you're kind of splurging on, you know, food that is not particularly micronutrient dense, this should not be the majority of your life. This is special occasions. This is if you really have a hankering for something. You should be able to honor that craving without feelings of guilt, without feeling like you've fallen completely off track, and with the comfort of knowing that you are still on track for your physique goals. But the vast majority of your meals still ought to be whole, colorful plants.
Yeah, 100%. And until you start eating that way, it's going to feel somewhat uncomfortable to do so, both like just getting used to your palate changing, being able to digest those foods. I mean, it's like anything else. You are what you eat. And when I say that, I mean that your gut, right, literally builds bacteria to break down the kind of food that you're eating. So just like when you're eating certain foods, you're like, well, I feel fine. It's like, well, you know, you're digesting your comfort foods fine that you're eating for the bulk of your calories. And that's all well and good, but is it really serving your health? You know, and it might feel uncomfortable to start to incorporate vegetables. You might not enjoy the taste of having vegetables, say, two or three times a day, or it might not even feel good digestion-wise, but eventually your body's going to adapt to it, and eventually you're going to feel really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, what you just said, if you're eating vegetables and you don't like the taste of them, don't get me wrong, there are certain vegetables I like more than others, but if you don't like the taste of fresh fruits or vegetables, or like fruit doesn't taste sweet enough for you, like there's a pretty good chance you've been eating too many hyperpalatable foods. And hyperpalatable foods are foods that are high in sugar, salt, and fat. And they're absolutely delicious, and nobody is gonna deny that a cupcake or french fries are delicious. They're delicious. But the more you eat them, the more you want to eat them. So there was a study recently where they had two groups of people. One ate a processed food diet. I think it was hyper-processed food diet, whatever that means. And one ate a whole unprocessed food diet. Now, the diets were equated for calories, macronutrients, micronutrients, but the people were not told how much they could eat. They just ate until they were satisfied, right? And I think this was a 2-week study. And then they flipped, like they gave the people that were eating whole foods the processed foods and vice versa. But in both instances with both groups, they found that on average, people ate at least 500 calories more when they were eating the highly processed foods. And I think this is for a bunch of reasons. One, it's tastier. It's literally designed to hook you, and it does. And then two, hyper-processed foods generally have a lot of fiber and water removed, so they're like just physically more dense. You can fit more of them into your stomach. And to me, I just thought this was an interesting study, and I suppose one could argue, well, you know, these people were not told how much to eat. So if they had actually had a limit to their calories or their macros, then it wouldn't really matter. Now, would it for weight loss and physique change? No, it wouldn't have mattered. But it's still a very interesting study that when you eat whole unprocessed foods predominantly, you tend to eat less, to be satisfied with less. And that's definitely something that should be taken into consideration when you're eating.
In general, yes. And I think on the whole, that is mostly true. But there are exceptions to the rule. And there are times where you can still wind up overeating, even if you're having predominantly whole foods, depending on what kind of food you gravitate towards.
Totally. The number of people who say, like, I'm eating a whole food plant-based diet, I just can't lose weight. And it's like, bro, you can still overeat bananas and sweet potatoes. I don't know what to tell you. Like, the science is still, the energy balance is still energy balance, regardless of what you're eating. But, you know, bigger picture, obviously sweet potatoes and bananas are going to be better for you than a can of Coca-Cola.
Yeah, so I get promoting that message. I just, you know, I also want to say it with the caveat of you can't just, like, forget about calories, you know?
Yeah, no, totally. So the issue that I see with the whole food, plant-based, no sugar, no salt, no oil, that crowd, and of course this is a generalization, there are exceptions to every rule, is that they are thinking in terms of the exclusion of foods. They're thinking more about what they don't eat than what they do eat. So they're thinking about avoiding oils at all costs and avoiding sugar at all costs, even though, like, sugar is sugar, regardless of what you eat it in. But with the fruits, you get the inclusion of vitamins and minerals and fiber and all that good stuff. But sugar is still sugar, you know? So with the approach that I like to take, I like to think in terms of inclusion, including lots of colorful fruits and vegetables whenever I can, including plenty of high omega-3 DHA and EPA sources into my meals, including plenty of foods that I really, really love, regardless of what the hell is in them. If I cover all of these bases, then I feel like I'm in really good shape. Eating a good combination of both raw and cooked foods, I think that's really important. So I think that if we could just think in terms of what can I add to my diet to make it more complete and more nutritious and more well-rounded, rather than like, oh, we need to avoid these foods like the plague because they're the devil, when really in a well-balanced situation, they're not actually the devil, as proven in so many studies. When they study people who follow rigid dieting, which, you know, the clean eating mentality is considered rigid dieting. When they study the diets of people who follow rigid dieting versus people who take an approach more flexible, like the one I just mentioned, the flexible dieters get more micronutrients across the board every single time. Think about that, because it sounds backwards. But every single time that seems to be the case, and I think it all comes down to variety.
Right. And then, like, you know, on a psychological level, you're far less likely to feel guilt about the foods that you're eating. And, you know, hopefully you won't fear being shamed by others for what you're eating, you know, by finding others in the community that support eating in a balanced way and having things in moderation that you can enjoy, yeah. Basically.
You're totally right. The rigid dieters also exhibit signs of disordered eating and body dysmorphia and unhealthy food thoughts. I think like 8-1 versus the flexible dieters. This is not to say that flexible dieting, and if it fits your macros, cannot turn into an eating disorder, because it absolutely can. I've seen it happen many, many times. I think it's just a lot less likely, but it's certainly still possible. And that's something I've been thinking about doing, like a YouTube video or a podcast on. Let us know if you want to hear that. Because I think people think flexible dieting is eating disorder proof, and it ain't.
Yeah, or people just wind up swinging from one side of the pendulum to the other. And I've done it myself.
I was just going to say.
I went from like being raw vegan to being like full on, if it fits your vegan macros. And then finally, over time, I'm like, wait a minute, this is bullshit. I got to fix the behavior, and I got to just find a way to balance and enjoy those comfort foods in moderation, which, you know.
I mean, sometimes that's a natural part of the process, though.
Correct.
And those are your physical and mental mechanisms trying to right themselves.
Right. And until you treat the behaviors that are just so far repressed because of whatever, a lack of community support or what have you, or just something you're dealing with on your own, the cycle repeats itself, and it doesn't matter what the food is. So, I mean, there's, you know, it's not necessarily as simple as carbohydrates, fats, and protein. That can be kind of a way to control the variables and mask the behavioral changes that one needs to make over time. But, you know, ultimately, you can use these tools and these skills to make sure that you're getting in enough protein, eating the right amount of calories. And then it's up to you to make sure to favor eating foods that are good for your health, essentially.
What should you do if you want to make sure that you're taking kind of the bigger picture of your nutrition into consideration rather than just focusing on macronutrients?
I would say start by placing the emphasis on produce when you go shopping. Focus on fruits, focus on vegetables, and then outside of that, you can focus on other whole foods like grains, nuts, and seeds. And the other thing I would say is when you find yourself eating the same kinds of whole foods over the course of, say, 3 months or more, I think it's best to switch it up a little bit. So for example, when I go grocery shopping, while my trips, I go and I generally gravitate towards the same things, like I'll go and I'll get fruit, and I'll go and I'll get vegetables. So while generally I go to the same aisles and I get the same kinds of foods when I'm in the grocery store, I do make a concerted effort, whether it's every trip or every other trip to the grocery store, to get variety, you know? So for example, when I'm buying my vegetables, 1 week I'll buy collard greens and spinach, the next week I'll buy Swiss chard and kale. 1 week I'll buy apples and oranges, and the next week I'll buy strawberries and bananas, for example. And this keeps me getting in a variety of nutrients.
Giacomo is very good about mixing up his produce, mixing up his grains, mixing up his beans. Giacomo does a really good job with that. I would also encourage you, along with that same idea of variety, is to get lots of colors. That, you know, it is true that certain colors of foods have different vitamins and minerals, and eating the rainbow, so they say, not Skittles, helps to get in lots of vitamins and minerals. I would also add to that, if you think you have a deficiency, get your blood tested. I am a huge fan of getting your blood drawn once a year. If you have the privilege to have access to that kind of healthcare, you should do it. If you don't have health insurance, there are actually certain labs that you can like buy online out of pocket to get vitamins and minerals, or even sometimes hormones tested, which is pretty cool. But what I would advise against is just throwing supplements at yourself. Now, a basic multivitamin, I just consider that to be a little insurance policy, because there's so many vitamins and minerals in a multivitamin. There's not enough of any one vitamin in there to hurt you, even if you don't need it, you know, as opposed to taking individual vitamin K supplements every day. You can hurt yourself taking a vitamin K supplement every day if you don't need it. You can hurt yourself taking an iron supplement every day if you don't need it. And in individual supplements, there's a lot more of them. So multivitamins are very low risk, but individual vitamins can be high risk. And I think that it's safer and probably cheaper just to get your blood tested than to just start throwing random supplements at yourself and seeing what sticks, because you will never know what you were deficient in or what you weren't deficient in. You'll just never be able to pinpoint what the heck was actually going on. If anything, you might be totally fine.
Yeah, a lot of it, believe it or not, you would be surprised how much of these things are really in our head. And we're so into controlling all the variables for our health, and despite our best efforts, we might just be being unnecessarily anxious because we don't know the facts. We don't know whether or not our baseline levels are where they need to be, in line, whether we're deficient, or whether we have too much of certain things. And the other thing you can do is, you know, and I'm a big proponent of this, be your own working science experiment rather than sitting there and overthinking everything. If you want to make a change, you can, like Danny said, if you have the privilege to, get the tests ordered and have them paid for, or seek them out online. Whenever you're deciding to make some sort of major change, you can measure your health markers before and after, and then you can see for yourself where you're at and what happened after the fact.
I think the biggest takeaway from this is just, you know, it's really important to take a good, long, honest look at what you're eating and making sure that you haven't really strayed too far one way or the other for your own personal goals. And that's like your physique goals and your health goals and making sure that it's in line with what you ethically believe. You just need to take a real honest look. And I mean, no one is immune. There have been points in mine and Giacomo's and most of the professional athlete buddies that we have where we can all take a look at what we're eating and be like, I could probably do better than that. We've all been there. There's no shame in it. Hello, welcome to being human. Join the club. There's about 7 billion of us. And you just need to take an honest inventory and then do something about what you see. I mean, maybe you're even really happy with the things you are eating, but perhaps you've been thinking in that more exclusionary mindset and there's something else that you could incorporate that maybe you've been a little bit afraid to, but it might actually help you rather than hurt you. Or maybe you are eating too many Oreos and you need to take a long, hard look at that and maybe get those out of the picture because, you know, common sense dictates the more you eat them, the more you want them. It takes a long time before you can get to a place where you can have one or two Oreos and then like not think about it again for a couple weeks. Habits, I say this to a lot of people, bad habits get built very, very quickly. Good habits get built very, very slowly and undone very quickly. So long, hard, honest look, I would say. Moving on to our question segment, we have a question. I'm going to leave it anonymous here just in case they want it that way. It says, how can I deal with my hyper focus on food? I find myself focusing on food all the time.
All right. Well, without knowing all of the variables, it's kind of hard to answer this question accurately. But when it comes to being hyper focused on food, let's just say that regardless of whether you're in a caloric deficit or at maintenance or at a caloric surplus, for some reason or another, your focus is on food throughout the day. And it may not even have to do with your hunger levels, right? So we won't find out the reason why, because we don't know. But regardless of whether it's because your hunger levels are strong or just because you're in the mood to eat, I think the important thing to do is to basically think about what your goals are, right? Because goals are one of those things that are achieved over a long period of time, and there's really no kind of instant gratification, especially when you've been at something for more than a couple of months. The instant gratification, those good feels kind of go away, and then you have to think about the long-term picture and what you're going after. And while that might not necessarily make you feel good in the moment, it might help with the impulsivity to want to think about food and want to engage in eating. Because food focus isn't necessarily just eating. It's the obsession with thinking about food, with planning to eat. It could be you sitting down with your macro calculator and saying to yourself, how can I make this food work? And you might just be focused on food in and of itself. The best thing that I would say is to find other things to do with your time that provide you with instant gratification, whether it's calling someone you love, finding a hobby or something to do, getting out of the kitchen, getting out of your head some other way, going for a walk. So what I have done personally that's worked in the past, and it's not, you know, I don't pretend to have all the answers, but something that I like to do is I put a list of things to do that I love inside of my pantry. So when I go to open up that pantry door, which is like my physical cue to say, okay, I'm focused on food right now. I don't give a shit because I know I can control the urge and not eat, but I shouldn't be thinking about food. I shouldn't be opening and closing the pantry door 10 times an hour, for example. And not to exaggerate, but I put a list on that pantry door. So the second I open it, I have another physical cue that says, hey, rather than staring blankly into your pantry and not eating and being proud of not eating because it's not time to eat yet, why don't you just look at that list of things to do and do something else? And then, boom, I immediately have a cue to do something else. And I wind up doing something else that I enjoy that has nothing to do with even thinking about food. So that is one trick that I've done in the past that does work. And as silly as it sounds, I even reward myself with gold stars every single time I do it. So however you could basically get the dopamine flowing and enjoy yourself in the moment without actually thinking about food or getting out of your head, stuff like that can help.
So I also want to add on, and I don't know what your goal is currently. If your goal is currently fat loss, then, you know, hunger and being in a deficit is something that, you know, you kind of just have to find ways to cope with, like Giacomo just said. If your goal is not currently fat loss, you are probably not eating enough. 90% of my clients that are very food focused when they come to me have either just come off of an intense diet, in which case this is biologically and psychologically normal, or they have been just restricting their calories far below what they actually need to be, and this is their body's way of trying desperately to get them to eat more. So, you know, all of Giacomo's tips are fantastic if your goal is currently fat loss, because there is some hunger and some food focus that is going to come along with that eventually. But if your goal is just to maintain, or God forbid, your goal is to build muscle, try increasing your calories. And a lot of these mental things going on, like food focus, like food obsession, they will start to clear up on their own.
Yeah, so behavior first, and then it corrects itself over time, basically. Next question is from at Melody Kincaid on the IGs for Danny. Why does intermittent fasting not help everyone lose weight?
Okay, so why does intermittent fasting work for some people to lose weight and not others? This all comes down to calorie intake. That's it. That's the short and simple. So we've talked about intermittent fasting a few times, although I don't think we've done a whole episode on it. Honestly, I don't think we need to do a whole episode on it. There's nothing special about intermittent fasting. There's nothing magic about intermittent fasting. At the end of the day, what matters is that you're in a caloric deficit, and that is all that matters for weight loss. And intermittent fasting can help somebody adhere to their caloric deficit by making that window of eating shorter. So for example, if I were to go on a cut right now and I set my calories to like 1500 calories, it would not matter if I ate those calories over the course of 20 hours a day or if I ate them over the course of like 6 hours a day. 1500 calories in a 24-hour period is 1500 calories in a 24-hour period. When somebody is not having success with intermittent fasting, they're eating too many calories, point blank. But why is someone eating too many calories? There's a couple of options here. One, they just don't know. They just don't know that they still need to adhere to a caloric goal, to a caloric upper limit. In order to lose weight, they might think that there's something about the hours that they're eating themselves that are magic that are going to make them lose weight, and that's not the case. It's always going to come down to the numbers. That's one option. Or they do know what they're supposed to be eating, but they're having a real hard time sticking to it because their window of eating is so small. They've been fasting for so long that by the time their feeding window is there, they're ravenous and they overeat. So for some people, that window can really help them. For other people, that window can really hurt them. I've known people who eat in a 1 hour window. They fast for 23 hours and then literally binge for 60 minutes straight. I don't know about you, but I can eat me some 3000 calories in an hour really easily if I want to. And that's way too much for me, for one. Not to mention all the other reasons that's a stupid idea, like you're not getting enough muscle protein synthesis and yada, yada, yada. Right. But at the end of the day, if intermittent fasting is not working for somebody, they're eating too many calories still.
What's a healthy window over here? I would say maybe like an 8 hour feeding window.
Yeah, I think shortening your feeding window more than 8 hours is one. You're pushing the limits really of what's intelligent here. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to be able to stimulate muscle protein synthesis as much as you need to in, you know, say a 6-hour window.
Exactly.
So, but, you know, there are benefits to closing, you know, basically telling your brain, I don't eat at these times. Setting up food rules for yourself in general can be helpful as long as they are sensible in mm-hmm. any kind of diet. But at the end of the day, it all comes down to calories in, calories out. All right, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in to another episode of Vegan Proteins Muscles by Brussels Radio. We love to hear feedback from you, so please do not hesitate to reach out to us at Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube, or you can shoot us an email at veganproteins@gmail.com. We love to hear from you. Thanks again for tuning in. My name is Danny.
And I'm Giacomo.
And we will talk to you soon. Yeah,